So essentially, we saw this Mishnah, and we saw that it brings us back into the whole picture of putting meat and milk into proximity with each other, and the fact that we seem to have an unusually strict attitude, an attitude that from the very beginning of the parak, back on Kuf Dalet, we had already seen Kuf Gimel Beis and Kuf Dalet Mer Aleph, that the Gemara is trying to figure out just how far are we going here. And we have had some opportunity to consider the whole question of the Isser Dorais of Basa B'Chalav, which seems to be somewhat limited and should be only involving Basar Behema, and not for sure oaf, and only should involve that which is cooked together. And once that's not involved, we're already a step removed. So if we're two steps removed, so then that should be already a gzeira le gzeira, which should be out of our scope. And that's why the Gemara in the first sugya and Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Aleph had a hard time trying to figure out the whole issue with Ha'ala. Right, so what exactly is going on with Ha'ala? If we're dealing now with meat and milk that are not going to be cooked together, so understood that we don't want to eat them together, that eating together is an Isser D'Rabbanan, but we're not talking about eating them together, we're talking about putting them on the table together. So isn't that Gzeira L'Gzeira? And so the Gemara has to essentially establish it in a way that's perhaps a little unlikely that you're going to bring them together to the table in a Kli Rishon that's on the fire kind of situation, which is maybe a little bit unlikely, maybe not so unlikely. But ultimately, it sounds like, for the way the Gemara establishes it, that, yeah, at the end of the day, it's still a normal, straight-out gezeira to prevent an Isser Torah, and nothing to see here, move on, don't stare. But as we go on, we find that there's still a little bit more, and we saw that the next Mishnah, which is really the same Mishnah, if you look at it in the Mishnayos, it's broken up in our Gemara, but the next Mishnah on Kuf Dalet Amud Beis involved a machlokas Beis Hillel and Beis Shammai about Oaf and Gvina, that Beis Shammai was more makel here than Beis Hillel, and that also brought up issues of possible gzera l'gzera. And here we now talk about wrapping them together in our Mishnah over here. And another din about two guests staying somewhere and they're each eating from their own foods. Can they eat at the same table? So what exactly is the issue here? So is this all still trying to prevent an Isser D'Oraisa? Or do we have some kind of added element here? And you may recall, when we got into the sugya of Gzeira L'Gzeira, so we addressed the issue of, is Gzeira L'Gzeira an absolute? Or do we find that there are ever any exceptions? And essentially what we came out with is that it's maybe a semantic issue, but the semantic issue is kind of a conceptual issue, which we'd like to hold on to the semantics. But either we'll say there are exceptions, and then we have to figure out why there should sometimes be exceptions. Or it's not so much that there are exceptions, the exceptions all fit into the rule somehow. That if there's a really, if there's what looks like it, it's an exception, then what is it really? What you might call a chad gzeira. Right? It's all one gzeira. So, just to consider the possibilities here. So, how would you say, for example, all of this is one gzeira? When we get involved in meat and chicken and all that, and assuming chicken is not included in the Isser D'Oraisa, so all of this, which includes chicken, how does that all become one gzeira? So a part of it, you get to see the Rabbaz put on the list this morning. Right, so the Rabbaz has an interesting formulation. Right, where it sounds like he's saying that people get confused here. It sounds like his issue is that the Torah, the language is not so clear. Now, what does the Torah say? Gedi. So what does Gedi mean? So we understand Gedi halachically to mean essentially at least all behemos, all kosher behemos. But one could, B'lash B'nei Adam, understand it more narrowly. So people could easily get overly literal with Basa B'chalav. And therefore, we need to be much broader. And there he has that language like, if not for ha, lo kaimaha, if not for this, that's not going to... If we don't make the gezerah very broad, then the whole thing's going to fall apart. So it sounds like he's understanding it. Essentially, it's a general issur of the normal format. But we need to be very broadly inclusive when it comes to basa b'chalav, because the nature of the concept is a little hard to grasp, the way the Torah presents it. And therefore, the gzeros need to be kind of sweeping. While from others, sounds a little different. And what other factors do we see here? And so, what language do you see the Rambam using? Is the Rambam using the language of Hergel Avera? Right, that here, that even though we seem to be a few steps removed from the actual Isra Daraisa, that there is some general Hergel Avera consideration. I'm worried about getting used to the Avera. It's a literal translation of Hergel Avera. And where do you find that phrase in the Gemara? Sorry? Well, yes and no. Again, like yesterday, every answer is right and every answer is wrong. You don't find it in our Gemara, so you're right about that. You do find it in the Gemara in Psachim. What's the context there? In Daf Lamed, in Daf Lamed Vav. There, the Gemara talks about the gezeira of not baking milchik bread. Where there was the fear that the milchik bread could be eaten with fleishiks. And there again, it seems like you're a few steps removed. Because let's say it is eaten with fleishiks, that's not nisur d'oraisa. Now, if you want to say a whole fancy scenario, like the Gemara is describing, and maybe you want to say you're going to have a barbecue and you're going to put the buns on the grill together with the hamburgers, and you're going to grill them all together. You're going to make one of those panini things. So, maybe, but that's not what the Gemara says. And the issue seems to be this Hergel Avera consideration, which Rashi over there in Psachim says you'll come to eat them together. So it seems to be that there is some kind of a general attitude that is specifically a concern here that Chazal felt they had to target. And that is part of the broader consideration of, like Tosus says on Kuf Dalet, that gezeiros chachamim einam domim zelazeh, they don't always fit into the same pattern. And that sometimes Chazal found different angles and different issues, and that every situation needs its own kind of approach. So therefore, when it comes to Bas V'Chalav, so they took a more machmir approach. Now, what reasons are there to take a more stringent approach with Bas V'Chalav than with other things? Yes, Jordan?
More common,
right? It's how you find some of the language, Shchiach, right? All of this is around. And what else? Maybe it's not totally different from commonality, but it's together. Right, so you find, right, you do find that language of Matzin Shchiach, but say specifically the aspect that the Ran highlights, which again is not fully separated from that point. We saw the Ran in the Lamed Beis with Apirif, was the Ran using language of? Well, Chal is also part of it, that you're going to easily violate it because Zlo Bediwe. Right? So you're not separated from it. That here you have two things which by itself we both do. Right? So we eat milk, we drink milk, and we eat meat. So we need to avoid doing them together. So it's harder when you're dealing with two elements, which each by itself is unobjectionable, to remember not to bring them in combination. It's harder. You know, it's one thing if you have a substance that's just off limits. So then you could say, okay, let's keep it very off limits. But when you have two substances, neither of which are at all off limits, at least all dietary and philosophical concerns aside, but at least trends aside, but at least within this particular halachic worldview, so if there's no independent objection to either, and it's just a question of how they're brought together, so that requires a particular sensitivity. You recall what we discussed about Chametz and Pesach, and we mentioned about the Eitz Hadas. Remember the point we mentioned about the Eitz Hadas and the Torah Tamima? Just to quickly review that, it's a fascinating point. A really fascinating point, I think, because it really taps into this whole issue that the Gemara Maseches Sanhedrin says that we have to be careful not to add on to things, kol hamosif gerea, that if you add on to things, you end up doing damage and causing confusion and causing counter-reactions. And we find that in the very beginning of the Torah, because Chava is under the impression that she's told not to touch the tree. And really, that wasn't the case. God just said, don't eat from the tree. And one could ask that seems to go against our whole attitude of a siyu siyag l'Torah, that we're supposed to make a safeguard for the Torah. And how do you now tell me it's a bad thing? So I would have thought the simple answer is that it's all in presentation. That it all depends. Are you saying that this was a part of the original rule, or are you making it clear that this is an added component? That had Adam said to Chava, listen, God said don't eat from the tree, but it would probably be smart for us not to even touch the tree because it's too risky, that would have been a very wise policy. But because he blurred the lines and said that God said don't touch the tree, that was where they got in trouble. So I would have thought that was the whole answer there. But the Torah Tamima has a whole different approach, where he says it's all about trying to cheshbon exactly what's necessary in every case. And where you find in halacha, so on the one hand, the Torah itself made gzeira, as we've mentioned, the name of the Ran and others, that we're not allowed to own chametz on Pesach. Why can't we own chametz on Pesach? So we shouldn't come to eat it. But we're allowed to own pork. We're allowed to own other machalos asuros. So yes, first of all, chametz on Pesach is just an akaris, a more severe prohibition. But maybe more to the point, that we're not generally separated from chametz. So 51 weeks a year, we can eat chametz. So if we come down at 3 o'clock in the morning in the middle of the sleeping, and we're hungry, and there's bread in the house, we might make a peanut butter sandwich with bread and peanut butter. If there's pork in the house, we're not so likely to make a pork sandwich because we never have that. But peanut butter sandwich, that could happen. So therefore, we have to go to greater lengths to keep that away. So that means if something is sometimes permissible, we have to be more careful about it. But then you'll say, okay, so what about Yom Kippur? So why don't we say you have to clean out your house of all food on Yom Kippur, because all the food in Yom Kippur is permissible all the other days of the year. So no, that has another component to it, that in Yom Kippur, it's not like you're eating some things and not eating other things. You're not eating anything. So that general mentality of not eating anything, that's easier to remember rather than eating a little bit of this and not that. So there's competing psychological components here, and trying to keep your eye on the ball and to remember what is important to be aware of, it takes a sophisticated system. So therefore, one has to carefully calibrate and not go too far. And to know exactly how to make this consideration. So here, when it comes to basa b'chalav, so we have a couple of added components. We have, on the one hand, that basa b'chalav are both permitted substances by themselves. And we don't normally avoid either one. So if it was just about avoiding eating chazer, okay, so then you tell me, stay away from chazer. It's an easy process because I never have anything to do with it. So it's not such a risk that I'm going to someday absentmindedly just make myself a pork sandwich. But the meat and milk, they're always flying around in all directions. So that's a bigger concern. And then, as the Rabbaz points out also, the textual concern that if we don't really understand what Gidi is, and we may not have a clear relationship to the whole prohibition. So then that's an added component. And it's interesting because also in terms of the prohibition, we discussed early on in this month the fact that here the Chazal prohibited chicken and milk, and the Rambam says, and the Shulchan Aruch follows him, that the prohibition is only eating chicken and milk, it's not cooking chicken and milk. And we try to understand why that is. So the Chasam Sofer has a tshuva where he says that the Taz has a principle that the rabbis never came and prohibited something that is explicit in the Torah. If the Torah explicitly permits, then the rabbis don't come and prohibit something. So here, the language of the Torah is Lo Sevashel Gidi B'chalev Imo. So it's as if the Torah is specifically identifying the Isser in a very targeted way. What are we prohibiting? We're prohibiting cooking specifically, and the cooking of the Gidi. So what's the Gidi? The Gidi is not oaf. The Gidi is not a bird. Yes, sir.
It's like maybe a hard logic to extend a lot of the Rabbanan's Rav Shas.
Okay.
Say that. For the fact that it's a Bosh Vashel, Gidi is Mashma, Dafka, Vishma, and nothing else.
Like, okay.
If you try to use that for all the
Rabbanan. Are you saying the difference as opposed to a Achila or as opposed to
Gidi? I'm saying if all their Raisas, when the Rabbanan's extended, look where there are a lot of cases where the Torah gave a specific case, and the Rabbanan extended it to different cases.
Right, but the point is that the Torah doesn't specifically say it's mutter. Now, what you're saying is that here it doesn't say it either. The Torah is just targeting the Isser.
Right.
Right. So that, the Menchas Elazar has a tshuva where he objects to the statement of the Chasam Sofer. and he says that the Taz is right, perhaps, that the rabbis don't prohibit that which the Torah explicitly permits, but it means exactly that, that it has to be explicitly permitted. Just to say that it's excluded from an Isser, that's not called explicitly permitting. So that's essentially
there are 500 examples like that.
Right, so that's essentially your point. And then that's how he is. That's why the Minchas Elazar objects to the Chasam Sofer for that. But it all goes to surround this issue that there is some confusion as to what exactly the Torah is prohibiting in the first place. And therefore, the average practitioner may not know exactly what is included and what isn't, and may have some confusion in his life. And therefore, we have a broader rabbinic prohibition than we might otherwise have, which is a very fascinating possibility. So all of this goes to contribute to possibly seeing this play out in a broader way than Isurim Drabanan generally do, because of some of these added components. So if that's the case, so then we get back to our specific Mishnah, right? So this is relevant to all of these issues, relevant to the first Mishnah about Ha'olah, and it's relevant to the Dinim Psachim about Milchik Bread, and it's relevant here to this Mishnah about how they're packaged together, the two Dinim here in the Mishnah, the how it's packaged together, and people sitting together. All of them all share common elements here of how we relate to Basa B'chalav, essentially. That seems to be Basa B'chalav. We seem to have a much more expansive zone of rabbinic prohibition. And is that all because that's what's necessary to protect the Yisur D'Raisa? Or is it that there is simply a broader attitude that requires a different type of gzeira, a different type of rabbinic protection? So how does that affect things? So one way it affects things is that we know la halacha, that, and we know this probably from practice, that this din in the Mishnah, there's two separate dinim in the Mishnah here on Kuf Zayin, but to say the second din of the two guests, and it's not just guests, but this can come up in our houses also. If you have different family members who are eating at the same time, they're each on their own schedule, though, personally. Let's say one's eating milchik, someone's eating fleishiks. So that's really where the din of placemats comes in. All right, so we use milchik placemats and fleishik placemats, but really the concept of placemats is really for this situation. Right? It's really for when you have two people eating at the same time, and one is eating milchiks and one is eating fleishiks. So that's where you really have a din that it requires a hecker. So here the hecker is not explicit in the Gemara, right? It just says you shouldn't do it. And the language of hecker is used in a different context. It's used in the context of the people knowing each other, in Makirin Zetza. And there's all kinds of very subtle considerations here. If the people know each other, if and the like. So what's not explicit in the Gemara is that, let's say they do know each other and they should be subject to all the terms of the Isser, but let's say they do something to remind themselves. So does a hecker help? So we know from practice, presumably we're aware, that it does help, but it doesn't say so explicitly in the Gemara. And this is something which is brought up in Tosfos. So hopefully you saw this Tosfos from, it was on the list a while ago, the bottom of Kuzayin and Mubeis. So that's really 2 days in Tosfos, and the opening part of the Tosfos is what says that it does work. Right? V'im yesh davar mafsik lo hevi kein tfisa achas. That if you have something in the middle, so that breaks up the idea that it's all considered to be like one section. And it goes on to say, "V'fikach noagin achshav k'shezel chol baser v'zel chol gvina al shulchan echad menicham lechen o kankan o sharkelim lahavsi pintayim." So nowadays, if there are people eating on one table, and one's eating fleishik and one's eating milchik, so they put some bread in the middle, or a bottle of something, or other kinds of utensils to interrupt in the middle. Oh, ochel al mapa acheres. Or one eats on a different tablecloth. So again, that's where you have the notion of placemats coming in to serve as a heker, the heavy kain shtei tefisos. So that's essentially what we find in practice, and that's how you have this notion of heker coming from this Tosfos. And the Tosfos then goes on to quote another opinion that that's not what we're talking about here. So essentially it emerges that there is a machlokus in Tosfos whether or not this works, even though in practice it's the first opinion that is what we see adopted, that a heker does work. So what's the machlokus about? So it's a good question. Our own Rabbi Eliav Silverman, who's a rabbi in Gross and published a very beautiful sefer through the yeshiva called Meshiv Nefesh, which is very beautiful essays on Basar B'Chalav and Shechita and related things. I don't remember if we had a chance to mention it so far this month, but he has a lot of very nice things to say. So he talks about all these concepts, and he assumes that the issue is, what are we talking about? Is this idea of not eating at the same table, is our concern that this is going to lead directly to an Isur D'oraisa? Or is it part of this broader Hergel Aveira kind of consideration? That if we're concerned that it would lead directly to an Isur D'oraisa, so then a heker wouldn't help. We don't find that such things necessarily are relied upon. And it gives the example that you're not allowed to climb on a tree on Shabbos for the concern that you're going to rip off a branch. And we don't say that if you put a heker by the tree, then that allows it. Because if we're afraid, it's going to directly lead to an Isur D'oraisa, so then a heker doesn't help. But the notion that it does help, that probably reflects that this is something along the lines of milchik bread, where we also find the notion of some kind of a heker helping, or some type of difference in the format helping. That if it's a broader issue of not having this atmosphere that could lead one down a path of hergel, so then a heker seems to be effective. And there are various halachic details as far as what counts as a heker and what doesn't. For example, say you should put a bottle in the middle, so the post can talk about is if it's a bottle that you're using to drink with, so then are people going to realize that it's a heker, or is that just going to merge into the meal? What if you normally don't bring the bottle to the table and you normally, or elsewise, something that depends a little bit on what's normally done. I happened to notice on the Starkey website, as I was looking for something else, I saw that they talked about that if you have two people sitting on an airplane together, so even though they have two separate trays, I thought that that wasn't called enough of a heker, because that's how people sit together on airplanes. Interesting point. But okay. Just also mention a few halachic details about the first din. So this idea of tzor adam basar gvina v'tach zachas, so you can wrap together meat and cheese as long as they're not touching each other. So the Gemara says, so, and if they are touching, v'chino geyez ebezeh mai havi, so what if they do touch? So aren't they just cold anyway? So two cold things they can touch, there's no transfer. So they're not transferring, so you don't have a need to actually remove the surface because they become fused. But they need to be wiped off. So, all right, so wipe them off. So what's the big deal? So there's a din here, it's brought in Shulchan Aruch, it's expressed by the Bala Itter and others, that you see from here, the fact that it needs to be wiped off, so there's an Isser L'Chadchila to put meat and milk together in a position where it would need to be wiped off, and then we have to worry that you won't. So if they are put together, so then you can wipe it off and that will allow it. But to put them together in that situation where that's what's necessary, So that's what this Mishnah is conveying, that that's also its own Esser. And again, that seems to be a part of this broader consideration. And Shulchan Aruch also points out that we're assuming that the meat is cooked, which is where it would be in that format that people would eat from. If it was raw meat, so then we also wouldn't worry about it. And raw meat, people are going to wipe off anyway. So then you wouldn't have that consideration. That also reflects this, again, this broader attitude of trying to keep meat and milk separate and some of the related issues. So all of this also impacts on what is and isn't considered to be a combination as far as Basar B'Chalav is concerned on a level d'oraisa. So this is telling us that we're not yet really at a point of d'oraisa as far as Basar B'Chalav is concerned, because that requires an actual bishul, an actual Masinas Tam. And that gets us onto the doorstep of Daf Kuf Ches Amud Aleph, which, God willing, we will pick up with tomorrow. Okay, everybody good? I really should wish everyone good health and safeness in this situation. Please remain stark spiritually, stark physically, stark emotionally.